This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
A.K.A. Feathers. Meg, you hit record, right? Yeah, we did
right
it.
Right here.
All right, cool.
Did you hit it over there?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I got this little record now, button.
So you're listening to a podcast called The Drop. No, this isn't The Drop. Which one is this one?
This one's Fuel for the Soul.
Fuel for the Soul.
We are off to a great start here.
What are we doing
we
today?
We got a lot of balls in the air.
Did you even say AKA Feathers? I wasn't paying
I
attention.
I do think I said AKA
Did he say
Feathers.
I thought he did.
Okay.
I didn't make a big scene of it. Mm. I was like, AKA Feathers.
Okay, I think maybe I'm used
to
the whole
Do you want me to do bigger? You want me to go
There's
bigger?
There's usually like a drum roll or All something.
Right. Da, 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 AKA Feathers.
Oh.
Okay. Which, I don't understand, like some people are calling you Big Megan.
Completely.
Yeah, when people are trying to describe, like it, when we were in Falmouth, people were trying to describe which Megan they were talking to. Nobody ever called her Little Megan. They just called you Big Megan. And I'm like, why don't people just say Feathers?
Who was it saying that? I never heard that. Was it
I never heard that either. I'm
probably,
not sure
probably,
I would love that, to be honest.
It's probably one of the faster bastards or somebody okay. like, you know, yeah. and I don't think they meant it as like,
They obviously meant tall.
Like, not yeah. plus right. size oh, yeah. Megan.
But that's just funny. Just
the big Megan. Is, yeah.
It's true.
But yeah, mm-hmm. tall. Or maybe it was tall Megan.
Tall Megan. I did it hear
it. It could
tall
have been
Megan.
Tall Megan. And tall I was Megan. Like,
you,
just
It could also
feathers.
Just been not your Megan, you know? Like, it, you could it, be Megan or not your Megan.
On yours, yes.
Yeah, on yours.
On Megan. On yours. Okay, there's a lot happening here.
Wow. Yeah. I don't even know where to go from here. Okay. This
but
week.
The point is to just call her Feathers.
We got it.
Correct.
I think everyone on here knows.
All right. I think you, yeah.
The Fuel for the Soul people know how it works.
All right.
That's how I know if people listen to the podcast.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about something related to this podcast. This mm-hmm. week, we're going to answer a few listener questions, but the first thing we're going to dive into is a new research study that I think popped onto all of our radars maybe 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. About rebound or reactive hypoglycemia. Please talk to us about what the study was and what the heck that is.
What is it? So everybody has seen the little white sensor on the back of Kipchoge's arm, right? And we know that he is monitoring his blood sugar. So there is a company called Super Sapiens that is overseas using these devices and to collect data. So they have, it's pretty cool because they have all these people wearing these blood sugar monitors, and it's a specific biosensor for sport. So it's a little bit different than someone would be wearing if they were like a type 2 diabetic, right? So these are being used in Europe and overseas with athletes. So they have tons of data on athletes, and this is the first time that they've put that into like a study to figure out like let's aggregate all of this information to see what we can learn about fueling for athletes. So it was pretty cool to see something, you know, published out of all of this information. So they used like 6,700 people in this study, and what they were looking for was something called either rebound or sometimes it's called reactive hypoglycemia. So there's a small percentage of athletes, we've known this for many, many years, that when they eat before they run, their blood sugar increases, right, as anyone's would, and then their body pumps out too much insulin, so their blood sugar drops too low, and then they start a race, then they start a workout, and they feel crummy. So what they were doing was trying to study how often or how frequently this happens in this group of, let's just say, almost 7,000 athletes. So that's what the study was
Whoa.
Looking at. Yeah.
7,000.
7,000. Yeah.
That's
so it's a
pretty
lot of
big
people.
Pool. Like typically right. when we're looking at research and we see these studies, you're not talking about those kind of numbers. What kind of numbers are mm-hmm. typical for what you would call a credible
study. A lot of sports nutrition research will be like 18 people, 8 men,
right?
8 women, or that would be 9 men, 9 women. But yeah, it's usually pretty small. So you're right. Like this is this. And the interesting thing about this is most of these users are tracking their nutrition and their exercise in there. So it's technically self-reported, if you will, right? But they're getting better data. So it's not like it's just somebody filling out a survey saying, I did this or I did that. Like there's a little bit more data behind all of this. So it was really cool to see them analyze this. So what they found, I mean, taking a step back, like I had to research this a lot in grad school. Like this was one of these papers I had to write on this, you know, reactive hypoglycemia and how often does it occur? And it doesn't happen to tons of athletes, right? So what this study found kind of supported some of the old research that we had already seen. They said 8 out of 100 athletes will experience this. So what is that, 8%? You know, it's a pretty small percentage of people that are actually going to experience this.
8% still sounds high.
Yeah. I mean, if you're that 8%, you're definitely going to want to like change up what you're doing, you know, if you haven't yet, for sure.
Wait, and so you're saying that 8% of people who eat before they go out on a workout experience this drastic drop in glucose.
But
if they don't eat before a workout, then they're okay?
So this took it a step further to find out when should they be eating to avoid that from happening. So most of us, you know, we've talked a lot on this podcast about eating like 30 to 90 minutes before a run. We don't want to have to get up too early for a warm, long run in the summer. So just eat as you're running out the door. So somebody who has this reactive hypoglycemia, that's probably not the best advice. What they were finding is the most likely time period to have that rebound hypoglycemia was within that 30 to 90 minutes. So those people need to eat like 2 hours before a workout in order to be better fueled and not have some of those negative symptoms. So if anybody is like, what's a symptom of, you know, low blood sugar? So oftentimes it's like a little bit of dizziness, tiredness. Sometimes we get nauseous. So things that you absolutely don't want to be happening when you're headed out for a race or any type of, you know, long run or anything like that. So if someone's experiencing that, this is showing that we can very much decrease that response if we eat significantly, you know, 2 hours before and a more balanced meal, right? So it's not just carbohydrates. We've got some protein, some fat. And so it's kind of looking, it's a very different recommendation for somebody who's experiencing those symptoms than maybe what we've talked about kind of on the regular on here.
Okay, but you know we're all hypochondriacs around here, right? And
yeah, everybody's going to be feeling it now.
You tell me, hey, you're going to feel dizzy. You don't feel great. You know, half the time when I wake up in the morning now, I am like, I feel like I just wake up like joints are sore. I'm like sleep hungover. Like it's like it takes a while to get up. And then, you know, I am not someone that naturally reaches for something to eat before I run. Like today I was going out for a short run, you know, less than an hour. But I was like, let me just throw a graham cracker in just to, you know, because feel for the soul.
And, for yourself.
Yeah, and I eat my graham cracker, but I'm still not, I don't feel good until I'm like a half mile into my run ever, like pretty much, you know, you start running and you're just like, oh
yeah,
and then it kind of fades away and you get in the rhythm and your blood starts pumping,
right?
But like how do I make sure that like 8% seems pretty big, but at the same time chances are I'm not hypoglycemic and having a episode before I run if I have that graham cracker right then.
Right.
So how do you gauge if this is something that's happening?
So the people that I've worked with that I've suspected have this, it's very obvious, like very, very obvious. Like they are having like some pretty severe symptoms and we play with it. And like I said, we push back when we're eating. We make sure that there's some protein and some fat in there because that will delay the absorption of carbohydrates so that we don't have such a strong insulin response when we're eating. So I think most people who experience this probably already know it. And then the interesting thing is I have had a few athletes overseas that have used this device, and one of them had it but never had any symptoms from it. Like classic book, like had that same, but never had any symptoms. So it's like, do we need to treat it? You know, like if you're not
devil's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
We just had that whole thing on about math and his recommendation to, you know, be keto and all that stuff. is this a case where these 8% people might benefit more from a keto diet than a carb diet? And so in some ways you can say, hey, there are like, because we're like, hey, it's not a blanket statement for mm-hmm. nutrition. We need to be flexible for and work with the athlete. Is this a case where that would be an alternative for those athletes?
Not necessarily, because believe it or not, some people have some really gnarly blood sugar responses to being on a keto diet because of the stress, because of the, you know, lack of nutrition at times. So it wouldn't be like, oh, just don't eat carbs as the answer. Like that definitely wouldn't be, you know, the blanket case. But like you're saying, someone who does experience this, it's going to take playing around to see what works best. You know, just because this study says pushing eating to a certain place, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to work for everybody. So this is one time that it takes a lot of pieces and parts. But no, I don't think just cutting carbs out would necessarily fix this, especially in the long term for people. But we do definitely need to take a look at what and when we're eating.
So you've been wearing this glucose monitor.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience with it so far?
So I haven't had on for too long, but I had it on for my long run this weekend. And I intentionally, you know, you guys know me, I'm like my own best guinea pig. So it was a 2 hour and 16 minute run. So normally I would have taken four gels. I would have done 30, 60, 90 in 2 hours. It had, you're my coach, it had a lot of work in it, a lot of varying paces. So the intensity was pretty high. So, you know, even though I wasn't running for 2.5 hours, I definitely would have taken that gel at 2 hours. But I intentionally decided I would fuel 30, 60, 90 and then not take one at 2 hours just to see what happened, not only how I felt when I was running, but to be able to come home and see like how was my blood sugar responding. Because just like we've talked a lot about with ferritin on here, right? Like if we can figure out what our symptom is with low ferritin or low iron, then when we notice that, we know immediately what it is, right? So I wanted to try to hook like symptoms of how I felt when I was running with what was happening in the background to personally, you know, reinforce what I need to be doing or make a game time decision when I'm training or in a race or anything like that. So super interesting. When we start running, our blood sugar is going to kick up because it's like a stress response. Our body kicks out sugar into our blood to feed our muscles, regardless of what we've eaten, right? So we often see like your blood sugar start to come up when you're running. And then obviously the goal would be when we take gels to bring it up a little higher and to keep it there so that it doesn't like tank, right? So that's exactly what I saw. I took the first gel and it came up a little higher than even where it was. And then it stayed until I took the second gel. It stayed until I took the third gel. And then when I didn't take the next one, my blood sugar just tanked and I felt awful at the end of my run. Like I felt so strong. I did. I felt so strong and so good through like 18 and then the 2 cool down miles. I felt kind of hopeless. I felt tired. I felt real cranky. All of a sudden I just wanted to be over. Whereas when I felt totally fine through 18 and I just felt flat. Like I just felt like it was an effort to pick my leg up. And I did not feel like that at all until then. So I was like, oh, I'm really curious when I get home. Part of me was like, what if I get home and it's like totally fine? And they're like, no, that's just in your head. But it literally dropped significantly in those last 2 miles. And I was like, well, if this isn't the perfect message, at least to myself, right, of fueling early and often, regardless of when I'm going to be done, right? Like I would have felt significantly better if I would have taken that gel at 2 hours, even though I was going to be done in 16 minutes, you know? So I think, you know, everybody's going to respond differently. And this is just how my body responded. And everyone's blood sugar is a little bit different. But, you know, if this wasn't like the best experiment on myself, like especially when we're out there doing long runs with work in them, you know, making sure that we're fueling frequently, can really just make sure that our body has the energy physically and mentally to be able to hang on and stay strong out there and gain more fitness in the long run.
A lot of times you're testing these sensors and they seem to be hit or miss. I've done one where it was core temperature when you put that thing against your, you know, strapped to your rib cage. That one just, it told me what temperature I was. I didn't know what to do with that information. I couldn't, right. It's not like you're like right. Run slower and cool down or anything. Right. You're out in the heat, whatever. And then we've tried stuff like Nix or what's the other one?
H-Drop.
Mm-hmm. And they mm-hmm. seem to kind of be like, maybe they're working sometimes, maybe they're not. And you felt this one's pretty accurate, like as far as, you know, working and reporting the data, it seemed consistent.
Yeah. I mean, so far I've had a good experience. I mean, I only had it on like 4 or 5 days. But that being said, I totally agree with you. Like, I don't love having stuff strapped to me. Like, I've thought about taking this off a couple times now. Like, I'm just like, it's just annoying. I have to worry about my kids touching it. And like, what do I do with all this data? I mean, this is what I do for a living. And sometimes I'm like, I don't really want to be seeing all this all the time. Like, I wish I could just see it when I was working out, you know, which that's not how this device works. So I agree. Like, I don't think some of these devices are things that like we all have to have, you know. So when if I am going to put myself through, you know, having something sticking out of the side of my arm, I want to make sure that I'm like gaining some knowledge that can help us all through it, you know. And again, everybody's experience is going to be different using something like this. But we know from science that if we fuel early and often, our performance is better. So, you know, being able to see some data that supports that too is kind of cool in the background.
Does it penetrate your skin or is it just sit on top?
Yeah. So there's like a little needle puts a filament into your arm. So the needle comes out, but the filament stays in there. So you don't really notice it or anything. That's so crazy. It is wild.
How's the needle come out?
It just like pokes you.
Yeah. And then comes out. Yeah. Yeah. So
you're like a robot now.
My kids hate it when I have stuff on me. They're like, what is that? Take it off. Just don't look at it.
Okay, before we move on to some of these listener questions, so just to kind of get the holistic picture on this research, if someone is like fine eating 30 to 90 minutes and that's how their fueling has been and they have no symptoms, they should not change anything.
Correct.
If someone is thinking maybe they fall into this 8% where they are hypoglycemic.
Is it rebound hypoglycemic?
Rebound or reactive.
Rebound or reactive. It's named both things.
Yeah. What's the best step to figure out how to work around that?
So the first thing I would do is instead of looking for a fancy gadget, just play with your nutrition and see if your symptoms are better. So maybe you're somebody who needs to get up a little bit earlier and eat earlier. And then, you know, we always talk about like, just eat some simple carbs and get out the door. It's the fastest fuel. But maybe that doesn't work for you. Maybe you need to make sure there's some protein and there is some fat along with that. But then like we're saying with that, that's going to take longer to digest. So if you're starting your long run at 6, like suck it up someday and have a PB&J by your bed and eat it at, wake up at 4 and eat it and lay back down for a little bit, you know, and try something like that. Yeah, I know. That's why we don't want to be the 8%.
So I was laughing when you say peanut butter and jelly sandwich at 4 a.m. in the bed. There's no way I could eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in that bed without crumbs, peanut butter, jelly getting all over the place. So you could, I guess a graham cracker with peanut butter on it too would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I eat graham crackers also in bed every morning.
Everywhere. I'm not eating in the bed.
Oh, okay.
I do.
Yeah. I do. I actually, I think, all right, we're learning a lot. I found that I actually do enjoy, like, if I'm, like, when I go to do a cycle and I'm going to go riding for a couple hours with my friends or something, or if I'm going on a long run on the weekend, if I can get up earlier and have something that does have a little fat in it, like whether it's a bagel with a little bit of cheese on it or like you said, peanut butter, I actually feel like I feel better on the run. But it is one of those things where I won't do it if I know that I have 10 minutes to go out and I'm going to be running in 10 or 20 minutes. I pretty much stick to just the carbs. But like if you had the perfect world as a nutritionist and you were talking to a runner or somebody who's going to go spend 2 hours out on the road, would you recommend definitely adding some fat and protein?
I do for cycling for sure because it's got a different, it's not a jostling to our GI tract, so we can tolerate a heftier food in our stomach, right? And then like you're saying, you're out there longer when you're cycling, so I think it's smart to try to eat a little more. Most of the Ironman that I work with will eat like something on the bike, like a granola bar, but they'll never do that running, you know, so we can treat it a little bit differently for sure.
Okay, very good. Let's dive into some of these questions. Our first one is from Anne. She said, "Hi, Megan, Feathers, and Thomas. I love the podcast and commentary.
You see how she got it right?
You provide for us all. I'm a first-time marathoner and recently did a two-day carb load for a half marathon for the first time. I've been trying to scale up my carbs during training, but still found the carb load daunting. A girl can only eat so many bagels. I have reactive hypoglycemia, so I try to have some protein throughout the day, too. I used Morton 320 mix and added a scoop of Tailwind word to the wise, it gets chunky. Oh, also, boy. During my race, I found it hard to take my last gel. I'd appreciate any tips on a 3-day marathon carb load and how to revise my gel taking in marathon training. I take one gel every 30 minutes and drink Tailwind throughout. P.S. I crushed my previous half PR by over 20 minutes.
Congratulations.
Clearly it worked. Clearly that carb load worked. Yeah.
Why do we have so much trouble getting that last gel down? Why is it so hard?
Because our body is working at such a high level, we're not getting much blood flow to our GI tract at that point. So to me, when our body is like, woof, do not take another gel, I feel like we need to respect that. It's our body saying, like, I can't do anything with that right now. You know what I mean? And I think if we're really at a point where our body is telling us, like, don't give me any more fuel, I think we either sip a gel or we swish a sports drink and spit it out. But that's why we want to fuel early and often, so that if we get to that point where our intensity is so high, we just don't have good blood flow to our GI tract to even think about digesting a gel. I think it's smart to listen to that, honestly. But that being said,
I didn't think about that listening part to the body. I was thinking, like, when I don't want to take a gel, it's like, I just don't want that flavor in my mouth. I just don't want that.
Right. Right. Okay. Which for that, I have a lot of people that say that, like, they just get fatigued of texture or a flavor. So I switch it up. Like, we'll have a plan of, like, we're going to do choose this gel, a different flavor gel, a different, you know, like, flip, so that, like, a lot of people will alternate, like, the Huma Plus and the Morton because they want something that has, like, a flavor towards the end.
I like that number second.
There you go. Yeah, I think you're going to just find your own little shebang for New York City.
Okay, so how does the reactive hypoglycemia factor in with carb loading?
Yeah, so Anne's question, I was like, well, we got to answer this today because we're talking about reactive hypoglycemia in that study. So when it comes to carb loading, I hear this often, like very often. People are like, when I carb load, I don't feel good. I think I'm being hypoglycemic. Because if we think about it, like, back to, you know, biology, when we put carbs into a healthy body, our body is going to start to absorb those. And as our blood sugar rises, our pancreas responds by giving our body insulin, because insulin's like the gatekeeper to take that sugar into our cells so we can use it. So the more carbs we pump in, the more insulin we pump out. So some people, like, overshoot the insulin pump out, and then our blood sugar drops. So sometimes when we're increasing carbs for a carb load, people feel like they're on a wild ride of their blood sugar, like, up and down and up and down. And I mean, she's says that she knows she has reactive hypoglycemia. Even if we feel that way, doesn't mean we have it, right? But we are experiencing kind of a roller coaster of our blood sugar, which, if our body's not used to that, we might not feel our best. So I do hear this a lot with carb load, like, how do I keep that from happening? So regardless of if you actually have the reactive hypoglycemia or not, what we would want to do is, instead of only eating a bagel, we put some peanut butter on it, we put some cream cheese on it, we put a slice of cheese between it, we have a cheese and egg bagel sandwich, we have a Greek yogurt before we eat our bagel. So, you know, we put a little bit of protein and fat in there. It wouldn't be as much as we normally eat during the day, just because we probably don't have enough space to eat all our fat and protein plus extra carbs. So I always have people scale back a little bit. But I mean, the biggest thing that's going to help slow that blood sugar rise is having some protein and having some fat with it. And then two, maybe eating more frequently. Instead of putting like 150 grams of carbs into our body at lunch, maybe we do like 100 grams and then a 50 gram snack with a little bit of things with it. So I'm glad that she found that it worked for her and it didn't deter her too much. But we do, again, we need to know our body. And if our body feels better by combining those carbs with some fat, with some protein, you know, then let's do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
And would it make sense to also extend it to a longer period of time? Because if you are having to take in more fat and protein, it's probably hard to get in all the carbs too. So maybe even start earlier.
Yeah. I've had a couple people that I've extended it to like 5 days, because if you think about, like, it's not like we have a finite time. We have to carb load in 3 days. Like, our glycogen stores are always like increasing and decreasing and increasing and decreasing, kind of like an accordion. There was a man playing an accordion on the side of the Falmouth race. Did you guys notice that? No? Okay. Totally digress. He was really cute.
I thought that was like a soundtrack or something. No. There was an actual dude?
Yeah. It was like an old man. Yeah.
He was good.
He was good.
They were rocking. Yeah. Didn't they have a couple dudes on drums?
Yeah. He was on the right-hand side towards the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know what Thomas totally missed, and this is total derailing this, but did you see like the Peloton crew and like the instructor was on one side and all the Peloton? Like that was the most fun section. Thomas was like, I don't even remember seeing that.
I cheered for him.
What?
Yeah, they were on the right. I think we were kind of turning a little bit as we came around. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a turn. Yeah.
I'm so proud of myself for paying attention to the crowd this time.
I mean, the crowd was insane this year. I really felt like you had there once you got past the hill area where there wasn't much shoulder and we got out, as soon as you get out to where the people could cheer, I just felt like it was all the way to the end.
It was a banger.
It was so good.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the accordion glycogen storage.
Your pictures came out well, by the way. If anybody hasn't gone to Megan's Instagram, your race day pictures look great.
Thank you. Well, part of it was when I saw that hill at the very end, I just started laughing hysterically. And I'm like, I'm going to at least get a good picture out of this. laughing and smiling and like, this is ridiculous.
We had that thing where we were talking about like getting a photo, getting a professional photographer. Mm. You don't need it. You did. Yeah. You did fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wait, another side note. On my run this morning, on my way home, there was a dude decked out in his running gear and there was two photographers out there. And I was like, no. It can't be, but maybe.
Was it all Under Armour?
No, it was. He wasn't even all branded. He had Altra shoes on, and like, I don't even know what the top was.
Huh?
It was wild. Anyway,
so if that was you and you're listening, influenced. Let us know. We fluenced you.
No, I'm sure. I can't, but I won't. I won't accept that.
That's my thought.
Maybe
they're
promoting. Maybe they're promoting a race.
Or maybe he's getting glamour shots.
Glamour shots. Didn't like his race photos. Listens to the pod.
Yeah.
All right. Or you can just go run next to Feathers and they seem to find her.
Mm-hmm. I'm big Megan, so I'm very present. So they got lots of pictures of me. There's that big girl.
Robbie runs in your shadow.
He does. There you go. Who needs a light pole when you have Megan?
Yeah.
Okay. Total derailment. But yes, back to spreading that carb load out for 5 days can totally work. So if it looks very, very daunting to get that many carbs in or you don't feel good doing it, we can spread it out. It does not, there's no rule that says it has to be a 2 or 3 day carb load.
The other thing that I try to remember with your carb loads, since I'm not as detail oriented as some people are, that I'm just doing more than I normally would. Mm-hmm. So if you just do a little more than you normally would, you're probably getting a benefit. I find it really tough too. Like even you just stop getting hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's carb loading sounds like fun. You're like, ooh, all the things that I love that are carbs that I could eat, pretzels, bagels. You get some and then you're like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I think that there's just an advantage to being conscious of upping it during those days if you don't want to do exactly four bagels every 5 hours or whatever. You can kind of play with it.
Right. And some people, there's so many different ways to do it, right? We have to know what works for us. Some people who eat a pretty high carb diet can do exactly what you're saying. Just scale it up, you know, but there's people who really struggle. And then two, that type A personality that wants to know, am I doing this right? You know, they're the ones who are counting it out and putting servings in bags. And, you know, but if that gives you comfort going into the race going, I nailed it, I did that right, you know, then that's okay. But not everybody's good. You're not going to do that.
Where do you think you fall on that scale, Megan?
I don't. She's not, I'm not like that. No. Yeah, I reduce my fat and protein intake and replace it with more carbs.
Yeah.
I do not calculate out anything. I'm just conscious of it.
In the beginning, did you?
I did. I don't think you calculated it out.
No, because I can usually get a vibe from somebody like what they need to be successful. And I never thought you needed that. I don't think you ever did. I would say I'm the most type A about the carb load out of the three of us. And I don't think I'm that extreme either. Like I tally it in my head, you know, but.
But I think yours is also because you're like you said, the guinea pig.
Yeah.
You like that's to true. Test on yourself and be like, true. Okay, if I eat this many, how's it going?
Right. Right. No, that's a good point. Yeah.
It's all for the research. All right. Another question about carbs from Allison. She said, first time writing in, and I actually have two questions. When looking at carbs, I often see fruit being looked at as a carb. Is there a good rule of thumb or recommendations for how much of our daily carb intake should be from fruit versus things like bread, rice, and pasta? Or does it not matter as long as we are getting in our daily carb intake? Are there times when one is better than the other, fruit versus grain? Thanks for all your help.
I know the answer to this one.
What is it?
What?
I'm not going to say.
You don't know.
I do know the answer.
Carbs are carbs.
What Megan has taught me is that once it's in your body and it turns into the, you know, the sugars and the carbs, it really isn't. It doesn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but timing wise, I think there's a time and a place for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, certainly juice before a race would be good because it's less, you don't have to do as much to digest it as you would to digest a grain.
Maybe we should let the expert tell us.
Yeah, that's it. That's
you guys are both correct. Both correct. So, I mean, yeah, like if you're somebody who loves fruit, like that's your carb, you know? You could technically get all your carbs in a meal from fruit, like if that's what you liked, you know? The only caution I throw out there is fruit is higher in fructose, which is a different type of sugar than would be found in grains. And it is absorbed a little bit differently into our body, which for most people is okay. But for some people, when they get too much fruit or too much fructose, they end up with some GI issues.
Are you saying fruit toast or fruit toast?
You know I like toast. I might accidentally be saying that, but it's fructose.
Fruit toast.
T-O-S-E.
Good morning, fruit crinklers.
Good morning, fruit toasters. That's actually kind of funny. Okay, wow, we are really on it today.
Low blood sugar. All
day.
It's
a day.
Need a snack. So that would be my only caution. Like if somebody has IBS or a really sensitive stomach or is prone to GI issues, like I would be careful that we're not getting all of our carbs from fruit just because we do know we absorb fructose a little differently, which can end not pleasantly if we're taking in too much and our body's not used to that or we have a sensitive GI tract. But that aside, you know, I think it's a balance. I don't know that I would want everybody to carb load on only fruit, right? That's a lot of fiber and a lot of fructose, but I think a balance of it is totally fine. So like if you're somebody who likes one slice of toast at breakfast, but likes a banana and a clementine, perfect. There's your carbs, you know, instead of eating two slices of toast or a bagel. So
see,
it's all a balance.
I find that person weird. Like eating clementines and oranges in the morning after you brushed your teeth, that's just bad.
That's a no-no.
It doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess once your coffee is, you know, set in, then you're fine. But that seems very acidic.
Yeah. It, you know, I mean, whatever floats your boat.
All right.
Yeah.
Putting butter in your coffee. That's what I'm doing.
Please don't. My heart hurts thinking about that.
So as long as it's not affecting, like there's no GI issues, and if they just have a preference of one over the other, mm-hmm. as long as they're getting in their carb needs, you're good with it.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Okay, speaking of the butter coffee thing, I just saw, and this might be at Starbucks or something, where they're adding olive oil to coffee.
Stop. I'm going to have to Google this. Why have I not heard of this? Why are you hearing about this before me?
I try to send you anything that I see that's weird.
Starbucks olive oil coffee is available in the U.S. March 30th of this year.
Yeah, what is that? Like
a large spoonful of olive oil in my coffee. Well, that makes sense because that's what it is. That's a great description from Bon Appetit magazine. This is so weird. Why are people doing this? Oh, there's a picture of it. I'm dead. I can't.
What is that? Is that the keto thing?
I have to imagine
it's
for
the butter coffee.
Well, I mean, they say that it helps with concentration and keeps you satisfied, and then you don't have to eat because there's butter, olive oil in your coffee. I'm assuming it's the same train of thought. I don't know. This is new to me.
Nutritionally, if I'm having my coffee in the morning, and I put half and half in it, which has fat, obviously, is there a big difference if I switch to olive oil?
And then it's disgusting.
So olive oil is a healthier fat profile than dairy and than butter. Obviously, that's from dairy too. Olive oil is like a very, very, very heart healthy fat. So, I mean, I guess I'd rather somebody put olive oil in coffee than butter, like from a health standpoint, but that just doesn't seem to
go
together.
And I suppose if you put in say you're using oat milk and it doesn't have any. Well, no, oat milk doesn't have protein. Does one of them have protein?
And some of them are added.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Why don't we just drink our coffee, and if you want some olive oil, dip your toast in it or something.
There we go. That sounds like a better option.
I'm going to try it.
All right. The last question we have.
Are we switching gears?
To what?
A little bit.
Because it's
to non-blood sugar topics, I think is what he's asking, right?
Oh, yeah. We're kind of, I don't know. This whole podcast is all over the friggin' place anyway. So our last question of the day comes from Karina. I don't know if I'm saying your name right. Hopefully I am. She said, hello, Fuel for the Soul. I really enjoy listening to your podcast and have learned a lot about how to implement sports nutrition into my training routine. I feel like I fuel properly, yet I'm always so hungry still. I aim to eat 60 to 90 grams of carbs a meal and 20 to 30 grams of protein. I eat a snack, banana, and sometimes granola bar before my runs. I fuel directly afterwards with carbs and protein, 2 to 3 fists of carbs and 20 grams of protein, have an afternoon snack, and eat a decently large dinner with protein, carbs, and fat. I have attempted to count my calories to make sure I'm getting enough, and based on my estimations, I am meeting my caloric needs as well. Why am I always so hungry all the time?
Did she say 2 to 3 fists of carbs?
It sounds like she's doing everything right.
I know, right? Doesn't it? She sounds like she's crushing it, Karina.
Is the one part we don't know is how long she's exercising and at what intensity?
Right, right. My question would be, did she change something? Like you're saying, did she increase her duration? Did she increase her intensity? Then she probably needs more. I mean, we never want to ignore hunger, especially when you're crushing nutrition like this. If you're feeling hungry, we've got to give our body more. And it would just be like fine tuning and tweaking it. And maybe it's a timing thing. Like maybe she's going too long without eating around her big workout. And then the hunger is like catching up later. But the other thing I wondered about too, that we probably don't talk about enough, is like chronic stress and lack of sleep jack up our appetite. They make us very hungry. So like, is she overtrained from a perspective of there's other stressors in her life and she's not sleeping enough, and then that plus her training, even though she's eating well, like her appetite is still raging, which could be, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a false appetite increase, maybe not, just kind of depending on the variables that we don't know. But I agree, like when I read it, I was like,
I'm wondering what she's craving.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what it like it, is yeah. It like her appetite, she's filled up on the good stuff and she's like, you know, it'd be really good, ice cream and candy right now, like, or something like that, where it's like,
yeah,
the treat side of things, the yeah. not eating for
treat show side,
for performance. Is that yeah. like between not knowing like how much extra intensity she's adding in and what she's actually craving? Like, what is she hungry for?
Mm-hmm. Is it her mind or her stomach that's hungry? What is she hungry for? The way you said that, connection. I thought you were taking that to like a more like psychology based. Yeah, I think there's things we don't know here, but I guess moral of this is like, she's crushing it. She's absolutely crushing it. But for anybody who is also crushing it and still feels hungry, like, we have to address that. We don't want to just ignore that, because the concern would be if our body needs more fuel and we're not giving it to it and we keep pushing, like, we're going to either like be underfueled, overtrained, a combination of the two, which increases risk of injury, decreases fitness levels, don't perform to our finest on race day. You know that cascade. So we want to make sure that we're paying attention to it. But I get it if she's frustrated, because like I said, I'm looking through this and I'm like, she knows a lot about nutrition. I can tell by the way she's talking, and like, this sounds pretty darn good. But you know, there's obviously a greater need of energy if she's still feeling hungry on top of this, or like we said, timing is off a little bit, or there might be that stress component or that lack of sleep component that's playing on her appetite also on top of some of those other factors.
You're right about her knowing her stuff, and where I got it was when she measured stuff with fists.
So
maybe like we should make a t-shirt, I measure things in fists.
No, we will not. We will absolutely not make that t-shirt.
Oh, God.
One follow-up question to Karina's question. So if it is sleep or stress related, like, fueling isn't going to help, right? Like, you need to address sleep and stress mm-hmm. versus right. taking in more nutrition.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. And that's where we want to kind of think about that, because yeah, you're right, like, our appetite will, like I mentioned before, be kind of falsely elevated from lack of sleep. I don't know, maybe you'll notice that later today after being up with Ralphie all night, but you know,
do you yeah. find that when you're lack of sleep, you're yeah. more hungry?
Very yeah. much so.
Oh, same.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. I never put that correlation together.
Oh yeah. And it's you're tired. And a lot of times our brain, when we get hungry, we start to feel tired. So when we start to feel tired and we shouldn't be tired at that point of day because we didn't get enough sleep, our brain's like, oh, you're hungry. So like it's like this mixed messaging thing. And then you're tired, so you just don't give a shit, right? So you're like, whatever, I just need to eat something to feel better. So you're just less intentional about what you're eating. And then your hunger is, in fact, increased. So it's a weird scenario. Sleep can be like the thing we work on first before we even start to pile nutrition on with some people. Mm. Yeah. Crazy.
Do you know sleep? And if you guys want, there's a whole episode on sleep. I don't remember what number it is now, but it's really good. So you can go back and listen to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. She recommended a weighted blanket when we talked, or maybe I talked to her off the cuff, and I really want it.
Okay. I'm into that.
Wait, so you use the weighted blanket?
No, I want one. I want one.
Oh, okay.
I'll report back.
It's so weird. I just saw a study on that. It'll probably pop up into my Instagram sales sheets now. The weighted blankets, they said, work for some people and not for other people. And they gave a reason. I forget what it was, which would be important to this conversation.
It would be very important to know if it would work for me or not. Maybe I'll just give it a whirl.
Yeah, I say do it. Get one. Tell us how it goes.
Okay. I'm interested.
All right.
I love getting cozy in the sheets. I love pulling it up around my neck and sinking into the bed. Feels so good.
I know. Okay.
This
I
know. Whole podcast is a situation that I'm not even sure how to unpack, but we'll do
Sorry, guys.
All right. Any last final words from anyone here on anything we talked about?
Are you asking us?
Yeah, she has another thing to say. So I was waiting to see if he said something. I was waiting for Thomas to just say something ridiculous instead. I'm just
all right.
No, I think the message here is we're getting some better sports nutrition research specific on endurance athletes, which is really, really cool. But no one knows us better than ourselves, right? So notice what's working for you. If it's not, we tweak it. If we can't figure out why the heck it's not working for us, we reach out to a specialist in whatever area that is. If it's nutrition, it's me or one of my counterparts, right? And we play around until we find what works best for us. So we have so much knowledge out here. As Thomas said, so many gadgets, but let's play around. With what works for us first, instead of always having to rely on, you know, other things to help us figure that out. You know, we know best what's working for us, like using the gel example from me. You know, I knew darn well that if I didn't take that gel at 2 hours, I was probably gonna feel crummy, and sure enough I did. So I will take it next time, you know. So I think we just need to be smart
and find what works for us. During a test run, not during a race. So that's
correct. Correct. Yes. So find what works best for you guys.
All right. That's going to do it for us this week. We will be back in 2 weeks with more nonsense and very informative information from Megan. Feathers, sorry.
Whatever her name is. Hey, you. I'll answer to that, too.
All right.
Peas and carrots.
Bye.
What'd you? This isn't helping that, is it?
And I think you should run with a bag of feathers and throw it at the crowd.
If it's as sweaty as it was last year,
right now.
They're just going to like stick to my hands. Big Megan.
No, we're not. That one's not sticking.
Feel for the soul. We mess.
It'd be like Thomas, like this on it. With me being like, that's one cup. Yep, that's exactly where I went.
Okay. Oh, that ain't it. Much. That's not it.
Sting with feathers.
Again, can't say that. Nope.
Just for the t-shirt.
Wow.
Do it for the gram. I don't know. Maybe we'd get a lot of traction on that. I mean, I'm here for experiments.
Yeah.